The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Contraception is such a controversial thing. And in the pro-life movement, you know, most people are against it because they understand that it creates an abortion mentality. Yep. A lot of the hormonal contraceptives are also abortifacients. But there also are good Protestants who think that, you know, in a marriage, contraception is not a big deal, right? It's something, it's one of the many sort of theological divorces that happened after the Reformation. The Lambeth Convention, that they would permit contraception in a few cases. Mm. This was the first Protestant denomination of any sort of large size that would permit contraception. Before, it was anathema. Like, everybody rejected it. You know, Martin Luther rejected it. Calvin rejected it. All of the reformers who commented on it said it was terrible. And it was like, what you would only do with a prostitute. I mean, they'd say really harsh things about the use of contraception.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
And that was Lila Rose. She was talking with Matt Frad on why the Catholic Church is so against contraception. I want to talk about this with you for a little bit. And again, I'll open the phones. My next guest, Dr. John Grabowski, will be with me. And we'll only have him for, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes today. We'd love to have you join the conversation. It's something that I know a lot of people have questions about. Let me just set the scene for you. Where are we as a church when it comes to contraception? Right. Last month, there was some big news. There was actually a controversy that was started. There was a 500-page book that was published by the Pontifical Academy for Life, and it was a compilation of really a conference that was held last summer. The conference, it was on that landmark encyclical, that incredible document, Humanae Vitae. If you have not read that, it's not very deep. It's well worth reading. It's so good. It's so prophetic, right? You know, St. Paul VI, wrote that in 1968 and basically affirmed the church's perennial teaching that artificial contraception is immoral, right? It's just immoral. What happened at the conference was this. Some theologians, they presented talks that actually did the opposite of what Paul VI did. And in fact, some critics have said that these papers in this book, they basically toss... They toss out what he did, you know, what Pope St. John Paul the Great taught in his encyclical, you know, on faith and reason. John Paul, like Paul VI and so many of these men who really were guided by the Spirit, John Paul was very clear on the rational basis of objective moral truths, right? That there are things that, well, they're always and everywhere wrong. And what these theologians did was say, well, that's not always the case, especially when it comes to sexual matters. Right? So, like I said, the book has caused a stir because it could have just gone away as an academic discussion, and that might have happened, except for the fact that the Academy published the interview with one of the theologians whose paper was in that book, a Father Maurizio Chiodi, who teaches at the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Family and Matrimonial Sciences, and he claimed that Humanae Vitae, that an earlier encyclical of Pius the 11th, are what he called reformable doctrine. And he even went further. I hope I'm not getting too deep into this. I don't want to go over your head. Let me just share this one quote with you, and I'll bring Dr. Grabowski in, and we can talk about this. And before I share this quote, I'll raise the question to you just so you can think about it, and we'll get Dr. Grabowski's thought. Is Humanae Vitae reformable doctrine, right? How about Casti Connubii, which was the document that Pius the 11th wrote? Is it possible that the church on contraception, what it's been teaching all these years, is off? That maybe you can use contraception. You want to limit your family size? You want to have sex, make sure you don't get pregnant? Is that possible? Let me just share with you what was said. He says this, quote, "This does not legitimize hastily substituting our own idea with the teaching of the magisterium, claiming for oneself an infallibility denied to the magisterium, but it does open up theological questions within the church and even the possibility of dissent, both for the individual believer and the theologian." That's a key line. It opens up the possibility of dissent, both for the individual believer and the theologian. Let's break it down. Dr. John Grabowski, professor of moral theology and ethics at Catholic University of America, joins me today. It is good to have him with us today. He, by the way, just a side note here, He served three times as a theological advisor to the USCCB in the areas of marriage and family. So there's nobody better to talk about this than him. He and his wife were appointed by Pope Benedict XVI as members of the Pontifical Council for Family. So we'll get his take. Doctor, it's great to have you back. Good afternoon.
Drew, good to be with you as always.
Stunning stuff here. I'm assuming this is going to go away. I certainly didn't think we'd be talking about this again so soon, but when the Pontifical Academy for Life publishes an interview with a theologian teaching at the Pontifical University saying, you know what, it's okay to dissent from church teaching. Holy cow. It may not hit mainstream America, but I got my antenna up, and I'd love your take. Where does this priest go wrong?
In a lot of places, unfortunately. One, the idea that somehow the constant teaching on the church here on this issue could be dispensed with, reformed in some way, that it is not irreformable doctrine, that's completely wrongheaded. That was not the judgment of Paul VI. It was not the judgment of John Paul II, who said that this teaching isn't just grounded in human reason and the natural law, but it's grounded in Scripture itself. And the church has no authority to change the teaching of Scripture. She can only receive revelation from God and hand it on. But frankly, I mean, it's an embarrassment to have a theologian, especially at a pontifical institution, saying things like this, because he should know better, because the church has actually taught specifically that dissent is never compatible with the attitude a Catholic believer or theologian should have toward the teaching of the church. When the ordinary magisterium of the church, that is the Pope speaking on behalf of his brother bishops, teaches something, at the very least, that teaching requires, the Second Vatican Council said, a religious assent of mind and will, an obsequium religiosum, right? And both the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in 1990 and John Paul II in Veritatis Splendor said dissent is never compatible with that religious assent of mind and will. Now, if something is not definitively proposed, that is, and infallibly formulated, it does not necessarily require the assent of faith on the part of a believer or a theologian. Theologians could, the Congregation said in 1990 in Donum Veritatis, question and try to refine the form in which the teaching is expressed, raise questions about the formulation, but always in a spirit of docility, always willing to accept the final judgment of the church. And dissent is none of those. Dissent is, no, this is wrong. I'm going to do my own thing and follow my own conscience here. So it's a category error across the board. He misreads the weight of the teaching, and he misreads the church's own teaching on how we respond to magisterial teaching. So it's frankly kind of embarrassing to have someone on this dicastery and at a pontifical institution making these simple mistakes.
So this Father Chiodi and these other theologians, though, they're arguing that you just can't have objective moral teaching, because look, life's not lived in a moral vacuum. You know, you make decisions on the fly in the middle of all kinds of things that happen in your life. That's kind of the argument they're putting forward. Why is that not a valid argument?
I mean, Drew, I think it was a good call on your part or your producer's part to play the clip from Lila Rose at the beginning of this segment, because this is exactly kind of the road that the Anglican bishops went down in 1930. Yeah. In extraordinary circumstances, we'll leave the method used to the conscience of the couple. Well, a year later, 30 different Protestant churches in the United States rejected the perennial teaching and signed on to the Anglican view that, yes, we approve contraception. We've seen what happens when you go this, when exceptions become the moral rule, then you lose any kind of, as you say, moral objectivity and the whole idea of truth.
That's so true. You know, I sit back and I think about a lot of Catholics who are listening, and A lot of married couples who hear this, clearly, if they heard that interpretation, be very confused. They might actually think to themselves, hey, you know, this guy's saying something like, you know, something I like, because, you know, NFP, man, that's a hard thing. It's kind of hard to stay to the course. So, you know, they might be thinking, has the church changed her teaching? Can she change her teaching on this? You know, and what authority does, let's say, a priest or a theologian have to be able to say that a person could dissent from that teaching?
Well, to answer the three questions you just posed, no, no, and none. The church has not changed its teaching. The church cannot change its teaching. And a theologian or an individual, no matter where they're positioned, does not have the authority to override the church's teaching on these matters. So, this is unfortunate. And unfortunately, it does cause scandal and confusion for a lot of ordinary Catholics who are doing their best to both understand and live the church's teaching, which does make demands of us.
It does. Well, that's for sure. You know, just outside of our theology, outside of our Catholic faith, are there rational, non-religious arguments against contraception?
Absolutely. I mean, Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae 17 predicted widespread social disaster if contraception were widely accepted and implemented, a lowering of morality, moral confusion among the young, a loss of respect on the part of men for women, the danger of government coercion in contraception and sterilization. We have seen all of that fulfilled and then some. The fact that, as was indicated in the clip, many things marketed as contraception are actually abortifacient in whole or in part. The fact that current low-dose oral contraception, the pill, right, is a class one carcinogen. So women who take the pill are putting themselves at risk for cancer. They are putting themselves at risk for a whole host of cardiovascular issues as well. So there's all kinds of reason-based, science-based reasons to be very skeptical that contraception is the cure-all that our culture sometimes proclaims it to be.
That's so true. Hey, if you want to join the conversation, I only have Dr. Grabowski for a few minutes today. Time flies, as you know. If you want to get in, you've got a question, a comment, or maybe you agree or disagree. Yeah, phones are always open for you. Pull up a chair. The number is 888-914-9149. Put that in your speed dial as well. It's good all day. 888-914-9149. I think your point about Humanae Vitae is a great one. I always looked at that encyclical as if though it was a prophetic document. You see so much of that unfolding today. Is Humanae Vitae, or even the much earlier Caste Canubi, you know, some people say, hey, they can be viewed almost as infallible teachings. Now, we know only the Pope, you know, declares, you know, it makes those infallible claims. But John Finnis and E. Christian Brueger, they had an argument, well, they argued, I should say, in the National Catholic Register that, look, it's been the ordinary teaching of the church for centuries, right? This is, you know, there's never been a time when contraception has been approved. So can it be argued that this is an immutable teaching of the church?
Yes, I believe so. So immutable, irreformable, yes. Has it been expressed in a form that everyone would recognize as infallible?
Right.
Probably not yet. But again, this teaching cannot substantially change, because this is something that the church has taught from the very beginning and is rooted in scripture itself. So therefore, again, we don't rewrite scripture. We only accept and hand it on.
Amen to that. Fascinating stuff. It really is. So where do we go from here, Doctor? I mean, what happens? This paper just goes into the ether, I'm assuming. People ignore it. Is he a minority, or are there other theologians that share this view? And is this going to be more common? We see the division in Germany, right? We see a lot of dissent in sections of the church right now. Contraception is one of those areas that people just, it's a tough one for them.
It is, but let me share one good news story here. In 2016, 2015, 2016, Some of us in the United States got wind of the fact that liberal Catholic think tank in the UK, the Wingards Institute, was going to issue a statement urging the United Nations to urge and pressure the church to change its teaching on contraception in the name of the global good. Yep. And so they cobbled together a group of signatories, about 87 of them, and they presented that at the United Nations. With only about 2 weeks' notice, we put together a counterstatement supporting the teaching of Humanae Vitae from theologians, philosophers, scientists, medical doctors. We had over 600 signatories put together within 2 weeks. So, yeah, this may have been the majority view at that conference in Rome that the Pontifical Academy for Life organized. I do not think for people who have really studied this issue and are paying attention, that's the majority view. Because the evidence is clear, both theologically and scientifically.
Let's do this, Doctor. We'll grab a few calls. I know we only have about 10 minutes with you. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149. We'll start in Miami, Florida. Onochi joins us from there. Hi, Onochi.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Right ahead. I wanted to know what the church teaching would be for families in order to plan, you know, like having how they have children.
Great. Good question. Did you get
without
that, Doc?
Without the use of contraceptives,
So, the I want to make sure I understand the question. What the church is teaching would be and how families should go about having children?
No. My question is, typically, families use contraceptives in order to spare, children. So my question would be, what is the church teaching on the right way that families have to go ahead in terms of family planning, spacing their children appropriately, and limiting the number of children they have?
Great question. And Paul VI, John Paul II, and now Pope Francis have all reaffirmed the church's teaching here is responsible parenthood by cooperating with the natural rhythms of, or the natural form of human fertility, which typically in a healthy man is constant, but in a woman is based on her menstrual cycle, and women are typically only fertile about 48 to 72 hours per cycle. By learning how to read a woman's fertility signs, and there are multiple natural methods that enable us to do that with great accuracy, couples can cooperate with the Creator's design, and if they believe they have serious or just reasons to postpone having a child for the present, they can use one of those methods, fertility-based methods or methods of natural family planning, to space or plan the size of their family so that they can adequately care for the children to whom God entrusts them with.
All right.
Great question.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We'll move along just for time's sake. Thank you very much. Good to hear from Miami. Dr. Fritz is listening to us in Los Angeles, California. Doctor, thank you for your call. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much. My question is, if the Pontifical Academy for Life is experimenting with the possibility that maybe contraception is not immoral or problematic, then when does the Pontifical Academy of Life think that human life begins? The reason I ask is from a surgery perspective, from a medical perspective, at the moment of fertilization, when 23 chromosomes of the father join 23 chromosomes of the mother to form a new 46-chromosome, new biological being that never existed before, that's when medicine says human life begins. Every embryology textbook affirms that. So when in heaven's name would the Pontifical Academy of Life say human life begins, if not at fertilization? Because if contraceptives in part result in an abortifacient property before implantation, which occurs 7 to 10 days after fertilization, well, when does the Pontifical Academy say human life begins?
It's a great question. I don't know. I have not read their entire all the papers in this book, so I don't know if anyone tries to tackle that. I can tell you that both John Paul II and the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in Donum Vitae in 1987 said that from the very beginning, from the moment of fertilization, we can determine an individual life, which is neither that of the father or mother, and how could an individual human life not be the life of a person? So therefore, I think the church has answered that question. I don't know if the folks at this conference from the Pontifical Academy for Life had that those texts in front of them or recalled that. I do think it's significant, yeah. Drew, if I can make a quick comment. I think it is significant that originally this dicastery wanted Pope Francis to issue they wanted to write a draft of a document for Pope Francis. Pope Francis declined that. Then they wanted Pope Francis to at least allow the dicastery itself to promulgate this as kind of an updating of the church's teaching on life. Pope Francis declined that as well. So he said, just do an academic conference and you can have your conference and publish it. So I think the Holy Father is rightly keeping some distance between his own magisterium, his own teaching, right, and this conference discussion.
Gotcha. Hey, yeah. Dr. Fritz, thank you very much for your call. I'm glad you chimed in. Appreciate it. Great question. All right. Let me move along just because we have a couple minutes. Let us go to Ray in Peoria, Illinois. Ray, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Interesting conversation. I guess my thought was, as maybe the many decades, at least in the U.S., of kind of a silence among, you know, national, you know, like Catholic political figures dissenting against abortion and, you know, no, you know, regular talk about that. And then most recently with the pandemic, we're suspending of the Sunday obligation. Has that maybe just kind of made it like, maybe everything is up for grabs? Anyway, just my thought.
I appreciate it. Doctor?
I mean, great questions. And certainly, I mean, the scandal of prominent Catholics who do, in fact, dissent and are very public about it from the church's teaching, that creates scandal. That's why it's a problem, right? Because people are like, well, if that really well-known Catholic can hold these positions and promote them, then has the church changed her teaching in some way? And, of course, the answer is no, but I can see why, and we've all seen kind of the hit that many parishes have taken due to the pandemic and due to a lot of people who stopped coming to Mass during the pandemic have not come back to Mass, even though the churches are fully reopened. So, yes, scandal, pandemic, they take their toll on the church, which is why we need to pray and try to evangelize as best we can.
Well, Doctor, I know we have a few minutes. We'll jump back into the calls. I do want to get your take on this, and maybe you're not the person to ask. Maybe my next doctor, who is a physician, could. But you probably have heard about this as well. There was a woman named Vicki Thorne, recently passed away, and she founded Project Rachel. Wonderful woman. She had been on the air with me several times, and she has written, she has spoken about how contraception alters the decision that people make. You know, we've talked about non-theological reasons for this, and you quoted what Paul VI had seen regarding humanae vitae. She also spoke about how female and male choice, how preference changes, that when a woman is on contraception, who she's attracted to, that changes. Mm-hmm. The pheromones change. There were studies done with apes or gorillas who were then put on these contraceptives. And then they would, forgive me for this word, if you've got a child, maybe turn it down, they would masturbate, they would rape female mates as well. So it radically changed, not just, you know, the gorillas or the monkeys that they did these experiments on, but it altered pheromones and chemical signals and scent molecules and things that dealt with attractiveness to different people. And I often think in a contraceptive culture, when women are on this when they're dating, they get attracted to a type of man or he to her. She decides she wants to have kids, and they come off it. And then all of a sudden, they think, who is this person I'm married to? And they're not attracted. They have these problems. I think that's kind of a hidden problem nobody ever talks about. What do you know about the chemical impact on attraction and relationships when it comes to contraception?
Well, Great question, Drew. I think probably a medical doctor or a scientist who studied this can certainly speak better to that than I can. But I have seen data. One of the I mentioned some of the risk factors for women who are on chemical contraception of in terms of cancer, in terms of cardiovascular health problems. Another thing the data shows is that women who are on contraception are more likely to die a violent death. Because women on contraception are prone to more risk-taking behavior sexually and relationally, and therefore might choose to become attracted to and get involved with the wrong kind of man, a man who isn't going to love and cherish and protect her, but a man who might want to take advantage of her and harm her in some way. So again, a doctor can say more, but I would just say philosophically, what does this do? It reinforces the church's teaching that love and life are meant to belong together, right? So that when we come together in marriage, it's with those two aims, openness to the gift of life and the expression of mutual love. And when we pursue one of those at the expense of the other, we distort and destroy both.
Wow. Very well said. Doctor, I got to leave it there. But I am very grateful for your time. I'm grateful for you leaving it on that particular point. People want to follow you, get plugged in. I know you wrote a book called Unraveling Gender, available from TAN.
Indeed.
What's the best way to get connected and get your writings?
So if they go to Marriage for Life, the number four, marriageforlife.net, you can find a little website with some updates on things my wife and I are doing together in our marriage ministry and talks I'm giving, book things I'm writing. So, yes.
I appreciate it. That's for sure. Marriage, the number four, and the word life. Marriageforlife.com. That's marriageforlife.com.
Dot net.
I'm sorry. .net. .net. You know, it's funny. It's so hard to get domain names, isn't it? You probably want a .com because people default to that. The .edu, the net was the only one left, but that's a great point. Do a search for it. That's marriage, the number four, and the word life. Marriageforlife.net. .net. So check it out. All right, I got to leave it there. When we come back, Dr. John Littell will join me. You're going to love what I'm about to talk about. Don't go away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's a perfect bumper, huh? We are running out of time. Where's it go? Time keeps on slipping into the future. You know, it's crazy. It's good to be with you. Thank you for joining me. It's good to hang out with you. It's great to be able to take a look at life and so much that's surrounding us, both in the church and in the culture, through the eyes of our faith. Hey, want to just put a quick plug in, a quick reminder for you. Father Simon, if you love him, Glenn Leverance of Morning Air, Timory of Trending, and I will be in Minnesota. We're going to be at the Christ Brings Hope dinner in Minneapolis, and that is coming up. It's the September 15th. It's an annual banquet that's always held in the Twin Cities there. And it's been a couple years since I've been there. It really has been, and I'm going to be coming out. It's held at the JW Marriott at the Mall of America. That's kind of a cool place. And it should be a fun and very memorable evening. If you want to come out, I don't know where they are right now. I had heard that they had a lot of people already responding to it, but I just thought I'd give you a quick heads up on that. You can go to relevantradio.com if you're in the area and you want to come out and say hello and be part of the evening. All right, it'd be good to have you there. A deadline for the tickets is, I think, next Thursday, September the 1st. So the window is closing. Time is slipping. Right? So good to be there. And one final thing, I do want to put a shout out for On the Night Train. If you've not yet signed up for that, please go and do that. You're going to love this. My sister, I guess, must be a supporter of Relevant Radio. She got an email yesterday and said, "What's this On the Night Train thing?" You know? I said, "Oh, you got to check it out." I said, you're gonna love it. It's done by Relevant Radio's new entertainment division, the Mary Beggars. And it's an audio drama. You don't see those anymore. I remember when I was a kid, I'd turn on an AM radio, and I remember hearing crackly old audio dramas, and it's kind of cool, right? But they disappeared. But, you know, today we've got podcasts. It's a great podcast for you. It's a great thing to listen to with the family, and it is it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be fun, and you can actually, along with your family or your kids or just yourself, figure out who did it. It deals with, it's a mystery. I'll leave it at that. I won't get into too much of it. Anyway, you've heard some of the promos. You've heard a lot of other people talking about it. Check it out, okay? RelevantRadio.com. Hey, I want to talk a little bit more. We were talking about contraception. We were talking about the ethics of it. We were talking about whether the church could change its teaching. But I also want to talk about the medical community for a moment. This is kind of tangential to it. The whole purpose of medicine, right, is to restore the body to health. And Hippocrates understood this centuries ago, that medicine could easily do harm as easily as it could heal. And that's why the very first principle of that Hippocratic oath is do no harm. I find it striking that a lot of physicians are no longer taking that oath. You know, I don't know whether it's not being offered or they're just choosing not to take that. Unfortunately, there are many today in the field of medicine who neglect that first principle. Maybe that's why they're not taking it. They're twisting it in a way that I think is bringing harm to the body, and as opposed to healing. And, you know, we're hearing right now about doctors who are advocating for bodily mutations, right? Those who maybe believe they were born in the wrong body. And these kids come to the doctors, even without their parents' consent in some cases, and, you know, want to have genital artery, you know, alteration, a whole lot of other things. You heard my conversation with Dr. Grabowski just a minute ago about the moral, you know, theologian saying that artificial contraception might be necessary in marriage. Artificial contraception is an example of medication that has gone wry. If the reproductive organs are functioning just fine, right, then artificial contraception does something medicine isn't supposed to do. It harms the body. It opposes what the body's supposed to do. But a friend of the show who's a doctor wrote to us and said that medicine has gone way beyond just messing around with reproductive organs. He says that the medical community has normalized abnormal sexual behavior. And what it seems to have now become is that we have non-medical people who do whatever they feel is right or good. And, you know, if you get sick because of it, well, the doctor will fix you. So in the case of something like AIDS or monkeypox, where the greatest risk factor is actually, believe it or not, at the time, what sexual misbehavior, they expect the medical community to come up with something immediately to stop the transmission of that disease. But there's not always this strong effort to change that behavior. So, and it's not just sex. It's also food. We eat junk food. You know, we expect doctors to give us medications to fix everything that's wrong. So in other words, bottom line, you know, we want doctors to compensate us for our sins. That's what this doctor made the case of pointing out. And I'm joined right now by Dr. John Littell. He's a physician in Florida, and he is an author of the book, The Hidden Truth. It's great to have him back with us. Check him out at his website, too. It's johnlittellmd.com. It's johnlittellmd.com. Doctor, it's good to have you back. I know you think that that's where we are today, huh? I mean, what are you seeing, and how prevalent, how rampant is perhaps a better word, has this become?
Oh my gosh, Drew! Always a pleasure to be with you, and I really hope that your listeners can listen intently, because what I'm going to talk about is what I see every day in my office here in Central Florida. I mean, every day I have young women, older women, parents who are dealing with the fact that they have not been told by their previous physicians about the dangers of things. They come into me and I'll say, this is obvious to me. It's not obvious to them. I understand it. And of course, a lot of it I wrote about in my book. And the subtitle of The Hidden Truth is Deception in Women's Healthcare. And I try not to say that OBGYNs and family doctors are blatantly lying, but where the deception has been is at the academy levels, at the CDC level, the FDA, the government agencies who have a separate agenda, an agenda other than first, do no harm, and secondly, allow for informed consent. So this, what prompted me to send that email or that text over to your producer, Tom, was was how many people I get calls from now, and they're saying, do I need a vaccine against monkeypox? Do I need, of course, the book I wrote about HPV, Gardasil, and I go on about the other vaccines. We'll have time tonight to discuss how, in God's name, that the medical profession now turned into a profession which gives a basic blanket permission for people to engage in whatever type of unnatural sexual relationship they want to have, and then we are going to try to prevent these sexually transmitted diseases that come from those lifestyles. We have never done that before in medicine. We don't ignore that someone's smoking two packs a day and say, okay, we'll treat you when you get your emphysema, but we weren't going to help you quit smoking. We're not going to say to the alcoholic, keep on drinking, but when you get liver failure, we'll go ahead and give you a liver transplant, right? We don't do that in medicine. We talk about primary prevention and lifestyle changes, but when it comes to sexual lifestyles in this country and throughout the world, we, the medical profession, have been told and forbidden, frankly, from addressing anything that, you know, is contrary to what the patient wants to do. That's called the concept of autonomy. You were talking about medical ethics. The prevailing moral concept that medical students and future doctors today are being told is really what they should only honor as a moral code is what the patient wants. That's the principle of autonomy, and never question. So I'm here to tell you we've got a real problem on our hand when well over 90% of the physicians in this country right now are doing whatever the CDC or the other agencies are telling them to do to allow patients to engage in whatever sexual practice they want to, including, and you all have seen the commercials on television for PrEP, that's for the HIV-positive individuals who want to continue engaging in the men having sex with men. You know, you're positive. Well, don't give it to your partner, so take these HIV medications before. Well, what is that telling these people? Go ahead and maybe we'll protect you against HIV, but in the meantime, we have an epidemic of hepatitis A, syphilis, anal condyloma, basically anal cancers, and now monkeypox. So what the CDC and people, I can name some names, but I won't right now, in very public places have done is allow homosexual men to have these epidemics of sexually transmitted diseases and say, go ahead, you won't get HIV, but you get all these other things. When have we ever done that as a medical profession? It seems to me almost an evil agenda. I don't know how else to characterize it.
I think it's a great point. I think it's a great way of characterizing it. It's clearly what it is. Let's take a call or two for you, doctor. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149, feel free to dial in. Dirk is listening in Upland, California. He's got a question for you, doctor.
Sure.
Go right ahead, Dirk.
Oh, hi. Hello, doctor. Show. Me and my partner, we have recently been trying to sire a child, and you know, I just can't really tell when their cycle is and how that optimization of fertility is going to be there. You were mentioning it a little bit earlier, but I'm looking if you have insight on that.
All right, I don't know if you can make that out, doctor. I know the signal was kind of tough. Sorry about that, Dirk. You seem to have a bad connection. He wants to know. Yeah, I guess we're trying to get pregnant and wants to be able to interpret or have a better read on his wife's menstrual cycle so they can maybe have a child.
Oh, well, that's in my book as well. That's the kind of stuff you learn from being able to go to places like in Creighton, you know, and they're not the only place that talks about how to optimize the chances of fertility. By the way, this is refreshing to get a call about fertility and people trying to have babies because we're dealing so much with an epidemic of infertility. But long story short is understand that the reproductive cycle is really focused around ovulation, obviously, and the production by the cervical glands of a very vital fluid called cervical mucus. And those, the ovulation method, which is taught by the Billings people, the Creighton method, and the Marquette model, and even the symptothermal, which is coupled to couple leak. I have all of them discussed in my book. Really, if you want to know something, go to johnlatellmd.com. I made a video for couples preparing for marriage that's out there. It's about a 40-minute video called Reclaiming the Good and Beautiful in Your Life. It just go into videos on my website. You'll get everything you need there, and whatever's not there, you'll get in my book.
All right. And Littell spelled very simply, as you like to say, two T's, two L's, right?
You got it, Drew.
L-I-T-T-E-L-L. There's actually three MD, L's. Yeah. There's actually three L's in your last name, but we'll go with MD.com.
John Littell, MD.com. You got it. But thank you for that question, Dirk, and I'll be praying for you and a successful pregnancy.
Well, I'll tell you, I did take a short pause. When we come back, Doc, let's pick it back up. Alicia, Downers Grove, Illinois, you're on deck. We'll get you on the air. The window's closing. I only have a few minutes left with everyone today. If you want to get in on the conversation, feel free to ask your question or sound off. 888-914-9149. That's direct access into the conversation today with Dr. John Littell. Again, his book, if you said, it sounds interesting. It's called The Hidden Truth, Deception in Women's Healthcare. Our conversation continues right after this. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in and for hanging out with me. If you want to join the conversation, only about 10 minutes left to talk with you, 888-914-9149. I am honored to have with me Dr. John Littell, a very gifted physician and author of a book called The Hidden Truth, Deception in Women's Healthcare. And you can find more out from him at johnlittellmd.com. We'll grab some more of your calls. Doctor, before I do, I just want to interject something because now quickly time is going to fly. In our culture today, there is an overwhelming sense of fear amongst people. There's fear of the future. There's fear regarding the finances and economy. But there's also fear just when it comes to their health as well. And what I mean by that is, you know, people don't trust necessarily the way God has made things. And they don't trust natural immunity. We did a segment earlier in the show on SSRIs and anxiety, depression, a whole litany of other things. We are a highly medicated culture. We rely heavily on medication, and not that medication's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. It's an extension of our intellect, and it can be a real blessing. I'd love your thoughts on that, though. This imbalance, I think, of how we navigate those two.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, the Hippocratic tradition, Drew, really dictates to physicians that we must observe the laws of nature and encourage people to seek out natural remedies and not rely completely on, you know, what makes me, I think, a good physician is that I tell my patients, the less I see of you, the healthier you are, you know, and the less I give you medications and, some need stuff, but really we need to get rid of this notion that every child needs a slew of vaccines to have optimal immune health, or that we need, look at what just we went through the last 2 years. There still is this incredible sensation of fear. I go in the hospital, I see doctors still wearing masks in the hallways being mandated, but then we go out to a restaurant, the same doctors are 30 of us in a restaurant, no one's wearing masks. So my patient came in today, she said, Dr. Patel, why is it the medical profession is the last to stop wearing the masks? So I said, what's going on here? You know, so it's a fear factor that everyone is suffering from. I just want to encourage the listeners out there, you know, it's time to take charge of your own health, your own fertility, your own relationships, and realize that the ultimate healer is God. And I just love, I go to bed each night just kind of saying, God, I hope I didn't get in your way today in the office. I hope I did what your will is for this patient. And that's really, I hope you all understand. This audience, I'm sure, understands that.
I wish I lived closer to you. It'd be great to have a physician like you treating me. Alicia is listening in Downers Grove, Illinois. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, thank you. And I just want to say that this doctor epitomizes how every Catholic physician should be, their value system and their approach, and God bless them. I just wanted to address the issue that it's not only not having the Hippocratic Oath and what they're doing at the level of medical education, but also in terms of these bureaucratic legislation. And I just wanted to bring to awareness that HHS is proposing a rule that basically coerces healthcare professionals and insurers to violate their conscious rights and religious freedom right by coercing them to to perform and the health plans to cover abortions and gender transition procedures under the guise of sex discrimination, because they're expanding that definition to include termination of pregnancy and gender identity, and failure to do any of this constitute, according to this new rule that they hope to impose, will constitute sex discrimination. So this rule, they're taking comments now through October 3rd, 2022, and I'm hoping you do, that it would have a legislature or a congressman to see their oversight over the HHS and bring this to light, because this is basically attacking the physicians and providers and healthcare plans of conscience who do not want to participate in this. And so it's really important that people become aware of it. And I know this physician is already on top of it.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, I appreciate it. Dr. Lee, respond.
She is so informed. Thank you so much. You know, you're absolutely right. We're having, and I want to get on hopefully before October to talk about the conference we're having here in Orlando called The Future of Medicine in Post-COVID America. But what we just witnessed, and I teach medical students, is that in the last 2 years, physicians of young men and women of conscience, those who felt they did not need, for example, to be vaccinated against COVID because they'd already had COVID, and they were forced. And so what ended up happening is the medical students basically weaned out the young men and women. I have young men and women I know personally who were accepted to medical schools and residents who were refused positions because they wouldn't subject themselves to, in their case, a completely unnecessary vaccine. And they're also pro-life, they're Christian, and you're absolutely right. So if you see a young medical student or a resident or a doctor coming up to you, which is happening, with a button on their shirt that says, on their white coat that says, what pronoun do you prefer? You know, or my pronoun is this. This is what the medical students are teaching, medical schools are teaching this. And if you have any moral compunction, any moral viewpoints that are pro-life, Christian, and according to natural law, you are completely not welcome in America's medical schools or any system of higher education right now. We have a crisis, so I'm asking your listeners to pray for medical students today who are having to be basically, in the closet about their views as pro-life Christians, and they're being persecuted. So it's rough.
All right, we'll take another quick call. Dee is listening in Los Angeles, California. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Doctor. My comment is that these behaviors, promiscuous behaviors, and do whatever you feel like. I mean, do whatever you feel good, and encourage the behavior is money driven for the doctors and also from the pharmaceutical company. Companies that they get, the FDA, the CDC get money from these companies, like I think 40%. And also when they have outbreaks, the federal give money to the states to control these outbreaks. So it's money, it's a cycle, it's a vicious cycle that they get money. And then as I had also Fauci owns 40% of the Moderna patent. And,
well,
you're right.
I have to tell you this. Follow the money is something I say probably every day in my office, because people have to understand when the government is buying 1.7 million doses of a vaccine against a completely preventable illness such as monkeypox, which has killed nobody in America. It's a self-limited viral illness in men who have sex with men and people who live with them, essentially. All right. So like the children. So we're doing things, the hepatitis A vaccine campaigns, the hepatitis B vaccine campaigns against children who can't get hepatitis B because they're not having sex and they're not exposed to blood products. And, of course, the Gardasil campaign with Merck was one of the most notorious, just blatant money grabs of all time by a vaccine company, a pharmaceutical company. So, yeah, follow the money. I'm sorry, but that's, you know, I think we've heard a lot in the Bible about how money is the root of all evil, and I'm afraid it is. But we have a higher God that we answer to, and thank God for that.
So, Doc, what's up with the monkeypox? I mean, if it's not that serious, why such a large buy? Do they know something we don't know?
Well, it broke out just like HIV. I was in Washington, D.C. when HIV broke out. Okay. My first patients were gay men who were coming in with these mystery rashes, Kaposi sarcoma. And even at that time, I went to a panel, and I might have described it in my book, called Sex Week, okay, at George Washington University. This is 19, every week, every year, the medical students had Sex Week, and they would put pornographic films up for the medical students to watch. All right, so they'd be desensitized to all types of sexual perversive behaviors. And then when they had the panel of homosexual men, after we've already seen people in the hospital that had these mystery diseases, I asked these men, is this accurately depicting your lifestyle, which was basically going to the bars and picking up people, and we would watch that. And they said, absolutely, and we enjoyed this. And I was like, my Lord, why don't you address the health consequences of this type of behavior? That was 40 years ago, Drew. That was 40 years ago. So I'm like, what is going on now that with monkeypox, we couldn't have just come out and said, guys, stop doing this and it'll settle down. It is exclusively a disease that was transmitted in that manner. Okay. As I discussed these other diseases that I threw out very quickly, hepatitis A, which used to be from eating raw, it can still get it from raw foods contaminated with feces, but now it's predominantly a sexually transmitted disease in this country. And same with HPV, of course, which I talk about in my book. I tell you, Drew, it's a reluctance to just to talk about a perverse lifestyle. I know people my kids' age, they say, don't ever use the word sodomy. Well, that's what this is, okay? I tell people nowadays, you know, you had Sodom and Gomorrah. We know what they were doing in Sodom. We don't have any clue what they were doing in Gomorrah, but it seems like we're past that now. We're probably doing even more about changing people's sex. And we have to understand what the consequences are of this behavior.
Doctor, we'll have you back. It's always fun to talk with you, but I'm out of time for the day. Please check Dr. Littell out. It's John Littell, 2 T's, 2 L, johnlittellmd.com. The Hidden Truth is his book. Until next time. May God bless you.